You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Choose Yourself Network. Today on the James Altucher Show.
I think a lot of entrepreneurs, they suffer from, you know, it's good to not be delusional when you have an idea. Like, you can't think to yourself, my business is the best business, or I'm the best comedian, or I'm the best athlete. You have to self-correct when you're delusional, but you also can't have too many doubts either, or else you'll be too pessimistic about your ability to succeed.
Sure. No, I said this to you before, and I think like we all know that there are different environments that we can be in that are better for us than others. I think you should be honest with yourself. You cannot be really successful unless you look in the mirror and you're honest with yourself, saying, am I doing everything I possibly can? And we all could be better. What's the biggest room in the world? The room for improvement. Like, we can get better, and we should strive to be a better version of what we were yesterday than the day before. And so the more you care, the more you're willing to do. So I think, like, the
but
same
I,
way...
I think, though, that it's related to... And sorry to interrupt.
No,
right?
No.
You're a quoter, and I'm an interrupter. So, another special episode of the James Altucher. Once again, I've got all-time favorite Steve Cohen.
Thank you very
in
much,
the house,
James. Oh.
Podcast producer extraordinaire, and also backed by popular demand since your last. Someone counted. We did a 60-minute podcast, and you had 48 quotable quotes that you said on that podcast. Like, an example quote might be, the way you do anything is the way you do everything.
Yeah.
There's one that's like a tongue twister that you always say that I just heard you say. It's if you don't do the best with what you got, you got to get what you could do best. I don't even know what it is. What's the quote?
If you don't have time to do it right the first time.
No.
Oh,
things
work out best for those who make the best of the way things work out.
Things work out best for those who make the best how things work out.
No. Things work out best for those who make the best of the way things work out.
Yeah, that's roughly what I said.
Is that? No, you mangled it. I was right. You're wrong.
All right.
Steve 1, Chessmaster 0. Thank you.
Good enough. So we're going to do a podcast. We've done 500 or so interviews on this podcast, and we've interviewed so many successful peak performers. We thought it would be good to see why sometimes people don't achieve the success they would like. I mean, not everybody wants to be successful. There's lots of goals in life. You know, success in one area is not necessarily the be-all and the end-all. Being a peak performer in whatever area you love is not necessarily the best way for happiness or life satisfaction. But we've seen a lot of people who do want to achieve amazing goals, and they fail at it. They don't succeed at it. And I think, and we see it not just on this podcast, but in all aspects.
And I think that was the derivation of this idea to do this podcast, because you and I talk all the time, and me sometimes more than you. But like, and we see a lot of people in our orbit, and we'll be frustrated with them, or we'll see guests.
Yeah,
and we
can see the obvious things. Like, we ask ourselves, why isn't this person like number one in the world, or number one in the city, or whatever? Yeah. And we can see little personality things. Sometimes it's internal; it's how they treat themselves, and sometimes it's external: how do they treat other people, or their activity, or whatever. So,
absolutely, and I think and I think like it's instructive for us, and we thought it would help other people. I mean, that's why we do this. You know, we want people to listen and get value. It's not a vanity project. We want people to listen and say, okay, you know what? I can learn from that. And I learned from that too. Like, you know, we might as well just dive right in and then get to other people. Yeah. But I think there have been a lot of situations where we deal with people and you are a comedian and you've been doing it for 4 years and, you know, super, super funny at it and you're getting great at it. But like when I watched you start, I've watched you, so in the 2 years I've worked with you, interact with these comedians and try and become a part of their tribe and try and excel at it and try and earn both status and affiliation with them. And there are times where I'll look at it from an external view and I'll be like, hey, you know what? They're okay, but there's a reason they're not more successful, even though they won't see that way.
And it's not just with comedians, it's with entrepreneurs, it's with
everything.
Sports, it's with
writers, it's with producers.
Like you know, obviously, you know, we've had a lot of athletes. We've had on Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the best basketball player in history. We've had on Tony Hawk, the best skateboarder in history. We've had on Sasha Cohen, ice skating. Keith Hernandez from the Mets.
Yeah.
What separates, like if someone's on a basketball team, they've already gone through so many hurdles to get on a professional basketball team. There's a million people who would love to play on a professional basketball team, and a couple hundred make it. And then maybe five are considered like legends, who, let's say at any given moment in the NBA. What separates like someone like a Kobe Bryant from someone who's probably just as good, but they could probably get there, but they don't? Like who could have gotten to where Kobe Bryant was, he was like, I don't even know if he's retired or not. That's how
he's retired. And he does an awful lot about, in that particular case, about having the Mamba mentality.
What's that?
A Mamba mentality, I think, is just kind of, I mean, that's a word I think it's kind of like a snake, like a rattlesnake or something like that. But he had a killer mentality. Like, he had a way of looking at things where he was very, you know, killer at it.
And what does that mean, like, in practice? Like, were other basketball players who probably had just as much skill or physical talent, were they not? Was it a psychological thing? Was it they weren't practicing as much? Like,
they probably weren't. And I think, like, we could see it. Like, I think it's kind of, you've talked a lot about this, about in the way, like, you talk about micro skills an awful lot. Like, okay, comedy is, you know, likability or interacting with a crowd or crowd work or, you know, just punchlines or writing or timing, you know. And I think with that, yes, you're at a certain level, and the details separate the good from the great. It's not what you do, it's what you don't do.
Are you dropping quotes on us? Do I have to write this down? What was that first one? I just want
the details separate the good from the great. And I think if you look at it, I wouldn't, you know, okay, I'll, you know, so we've had Bill Cartwright on the podcast, And
so he just to mention, he was the center of the Chicago Bulls when Michael Jordan played with them. He won a bunch of championship rings or whatever they are.
Yeah, he won five. He won three as a player and two as a coach. And he's been around a lot of great players. And having been around him, I watch him evaluate different people. And I remember when we started, and then we'll get to like sports or different people. But like, I think that I remember you were seeking approval because you wanted to join the fraternity of comedians. And I think that you were speaking to a bunch of comedians who had, you know, a degree of success. They were talented and, you know, and they were all talking, in my opinion, about their success. And they were kind of satisfied with it. And they said that they, you asked them about like, what's the difference between you and Amy Schumer and Chris Rock? And they were like, just money. You know, we're just as good. And I felt like if I were around people who were of a comparable amount of success professionally, you know, they, in music, they wouldn't be saying they're better than Adele. They wouldn't be saying they're better than Taylor Swift or Beyonce. They would say they love music and they love to do it. And I felt like that, in their opinion, they were complacent and they were happy where they were. And
Or do you think...
And so,
do you think they're complacent for artificial reasons? And again, I don't want to keep it to just comic because I find this in every area.
No, for sure.
But are they complacent because they're like, there's two ways to be complacent. Let's call positive and negative. Are they complacent because, I'm happy with where I'm at. I've got other things to do going on in my life. Because I know some people like that, and that's fine.
Sure.
But then there's kind of this negative complacency, which is they think there's a delusional complacency, which is they think they're already should be good. It's just that their amazing skills and talent haven't been properly recognized. They've been shafted by the system.
Okay. Now, I would say the football coach, Bill Parcells, a name that's most likely not going to ring any bells with you, but he won all these championships, and he would constantly reinforce to his team that you are what your record is. You know, if your record is 2-5, that's what you are. So if you're not doing something, that's who you are. But I would say we all know people in our industry. You know, my dad was a physician. You were in computer programming. You know, in any position, we see, again, the details separate the good from the great. Now, when I was in TV, I remember seeing, you know, I can watch TV and I can look at people on TV. And I guess only if you really know, you can see their habits and see the distinction. And, you know, obviously Malcolm Gladwell's talked about it, but I was talking about it with a former colleague about a reporter, and I felt like, wow, she's, you know, very physically appealing and she's, you know, good, but I don't know why she's not further along. And sometimes it takes like a desire, like a real burning desire to get there, that successful people do stuff unsuccessful people don't do. And this producer said, well, Steve, like, you know, when she does a piece, you know, she just does the same rap and intro every single time. She doesn't vary it. She's not enterprising stories. She's repeating, not reporting. And we see that in every single industry. And
in that case, she's not maybe reviewing the video that she was just in and analyzing it, or analyzing it with a coach to kind of say, hey, you did this the same thing, you know, two times in a row, three times in a row, maybe vary it up a little bit, maybe move around a little more, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know what else.
There's a lot she could have done in that particular case. You know, and I have a friend who's in that industry, and he said, I know it sounds sexist, but it's a cosmetic industry. I mean, in any industry, I know men who are anchors and they're incredibly fit. And, you know, people used to say that about the golfer Phil Mickelson with Tiger Woods. They said, if he really wanted to be, you know, the best in the world, or is missing that one thing, like maybe he would have lost 10 or 20 pounds and been a little bit more fit. You know, and so, yes.
And I think it's not, okay, part of it, you know, in that particular case, it's not fitness, so one could look better on camera, but, you know, playing 18 or some of these tournaments or 64 holes of golf or whatever, it takes a lot of energy. So if you're going to get tired faster and you're playing an athletic sport at the highest possible level against Tiger Woods, who's amazingly fit, He's gonna have much more energy to finish strong.
Yeah, I would say a few things. Like one, it's kind of like Stephen Covey says, if you have a burning desire for something, like to do something, it's going to be easier for you to say no, right? Like a lot of, and so, but getting back to that situation, if you really want it bad enough, you'll figure out a way to do it, you know? And if you love something and you have a passion for it and you have a modicum of skill, I think about in what we do, like we've had some success here, but what we always try and tell ourselves, not how good you are, it's how good you want to be. Like you're in love, or if I'm in love, you know, it's something you don't just, you put your heart into it and you really think, wow, how could I have done better? Like if you buy somebody you love a gift, you're not like, well, I just got them that. I hope they love it. I hope they really do it. So when we do something, it's, again, like I'll sit back and say, you know what? I could have done this differently, even though nobody else would notice. You know, I remember when I was at the early show, Beyonce, like she was taping something and she had the flu and she just kept working at it. And I remember like there was a perfectly good version of one of the songs and she was like, no, I'm doing it again. And it's that drive. And Kobe Bryant has that drive. He wants to win more than other people. And you judge somebody, you judge their priorities by somebody's actions. Like, do they go in a team where they can win, or do they just want to make money? You know, and so that's with any situation. And
so do you think that like, there's basketball players out there that they look at Kobe Bryant and they're like, oh, I could be as good as him.
Yes, 100%.
He just got lucky with the PR machine.
100%. 100%.
But don't they think to themselves, oh, if I just wake up at 5 in the morning every day and to practice an extra hour, I could do it.
And we've talked about that a lot. I'm sure some people think like that, but you either you have to have that fire in you and drive. And I remember there was like in the Olympics one year, there was something with Michael Phelps and Ryan Lochte, and Ryan Lochte was like eating poorly and he kind of reformed his situation, and Michael Phelps had just come back, and you know, maybe Michael Phelps is more talented. You know, like in certain situations, again, maybe in this, but I guess Ryan Lochte can be a better version of himself and still never be as effective as Michael Phelps, but he could certainly be better than you were. So I think that's the situation. So like these comedians, they could be better. We all could be better. What's the biggest room in the world? The room for improvement. Like we can get better and we should strive to be a better version of what we were yesterday than the day before. So somebody like Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan or Larry Bird or Magic Johnson, they're perfectionists and they really, you know, desire to be the best and have that desire, that burning desire. And there's a difference between certain people. You see that in business. And that's what I'm so intrigued by your book, Think Like a Billionaire. A lot of people would be happy just having 10 million or 100 million. And what is it about these people, whether it's avarice, desire, you know, competitiveness,
Right. So there's that ambition, but you take a look at a lot of these guys, like Ken Langone, you know, who started Home Depot. He's contributed so much to New York City hospitals as a big philanthropist, but probably worth 10, 15 billion, whatever it is. He described one story where I think it was 1969. He was losing a deal to Ross Perot in the morning. Ross Perot calls him and says, we're gonna do the deal with Goldman Sachs instead of you. And Ken Langone said, what are you doing for lunch? And Ross was like, Ken, you're in New York City. And Ken's like, I don't care. Book a place, I'll see you at 1. And he jumped right on a plane and flew to Dallas. So it means to me there's lots of things happening. Yeah. It's not just a desire for money. It means Ken Langone has to be physically healthy. I'm not saying he has to be in athletic shape, or he has to be good looking. He just has to be healthy enough that he's going to have the energy to think on his feet really fast. And like if you're tired and sick, you can't think, oh, I'm going to meet him for lunch and get there. Then he's got to get to the airport. He's got to handle the plane ride, drive there. He's got to have the kind of emotional backing around him. Like his wife and family have to be fine with it. He's got to bring whatever employee, he's got to have the right employees. He's got to have the right people around him. He has to have faith in his ability to convince Ross Perot. So I think a lot of entrepreneurs, they suffer from, you know, it's good to not be delusional when you have an idea. Like you can't think to yourself, my business is the best business, or I'm the best comedian, or I'm the best athlete. You have to self correct when you're delusional, but you also can't have too many doubts either, or else you'll be too pessimistic about your ability to succeed.
Sure. No, I said this to you before, and I think like we all know that there are different environments that we can be in that are better for us than others. Now, I happen to be a sports fan, and Kobe Bryant, his dad was a professional player in Italy. You know, maybe it helped him to be in Italy, and he didn't have, you know, he was in an international country, a foreign country, and he came over here, but he came to the NBA as a young person, but he was groomed for it. And
so he probably didn't have as many doubts as someone who rose up, got on a team, and is just, you know, grateful to be on that team and doesn't work harder somehow because they think maybe they can't get better or, I don't know.
I know, like, he studied Michael Jordan. He was very driven, and he came from an area where he felt a certain degree of, like, sure, I'm entitled and I deserve this. But then he had that extra competitiveness. And I don't know. Like, I don't know how much nature it is and nurture. You probably see it in 6 or 7 year old kids where they're competitive. They need to win. Like, they throw a fit if they lose. And sometimes it's, but then you're going to say, okay, once you get to the NBA, everybody is like that. And they're not all like that. You know, there are guys who, you know, will go out to clubs at 3 or 4 in the morning, figuring like, I have $100 million in the bank. I can't control it. And it's in every profession. Like, well, I'm not in a good team, and they make excuses. Well,
or you know. Here's another thing I've seen. So I'll go out to dinner with people who are quote unquote entrepreneurs or writers or whatever. Sure. And they always tell me, well, here's my idea for a business. Here's my idea for a book. Yeah. And then they'll keep talking and drinking and talking and drinking. Yeah. Next thing I know, it's like 11 p.m. And for me, I like to get up early so I can start writing or whatever. When I wonder to myself where, if these people are doing it every single, there's sort of this inertia where you have all these ideas, but you never execute on them. Like, inertia just keeps driving you forward, but you can't succeed if you're not actually doing things.
Well, yesterday I was
carving out the time.
Yesterday I had dinner with someone, and she's a track and field champion, and she was like an Olympic caliber athlete. And she was like, I stopped eating at 6 or 7 in the morning, and it was hard for me. My dad was a champion, you know, track and field person himself. And he, when I was 13, I was the best in my country. But then he told me, listen, you're good for this level, but if you really want to be good, you're going to have to deny yourself certain things. And it's the old line, like, you know, it's not what you do, it's what you don't do. It's not the athlete who like works out 3 or 4 hours a day. It's a guy who's not eating McDonald's. It's a guy who's not going out drinking with everybody. It's the guy who's getting enough rest. And a lot of those people, they think that they could talk it into existence. And we've talked a lot about how you could act something into existence, you know? And
to write, you could have the best ideas for a thriller in the world, but we know, like, we just had Brad Thor on the podcast. Yeah. We know that guy writes, what did he say? Like 3,000 words a day, basically.
And I'll say this for people, because even though, like, there's that aphorism, like, no man's a hero to his valet, or familiarity brings contempt. I've been with you for 2 years, and you work harder than anybody I've ever seen. And so it's not an accident. So I think people look at people's results, and they say they have jealousy or they have envy, but you should stop and think. And like, well, that athlete spent a lot of time in the gym, or he spent a lot of time training, or he spent a lot of time reading every book about it. And so I think you should be honest with yourself. You cannot be really successful unless you look in the mirror and you're honest with yourself, saying, am I doing everything I possibly can? And I feel like a little humbled and presumptuous to talk about other people's stuff, because I know, as we've said, like, don't point the finger, point the thumb. We can look at ourselves, and there are reasons when I'm not more successful. I could be doing things that I'm not doing, or doing stuff you're more uncomfortable with, or doing what's most important first.
Well, and you know, that's a good point, because I sometimes, let's say among my books that I've written, I think sometimes towards the end, like, I get very excited to start, and then I write, and I write the book. But, you know, we've talked about this also, that the details at the end are just as important as how you start. Like, it's a different skill set to kind of finish something. But I think I think I get careless sometimes. I don't do that extra final step often that it takes to be great. Well, it's like, really hard to do the details at the end.
Well, Jay-Z said, treat your first like your last and your last like your first. I mean, you have to treat it a certain way. In relationships, you should treat people with the same deference you do in the middle of the relationship than you do in the beginning. When in the beginning, you're so deferent to them and you're so concerned about them. And I try and do that. You try and appreciate people and respect it. We all lose sight, though, of different things in our lives. And so I've talked about this to people where I've looked at their podcast or something, and I'm like, hey, they don't have that many downloads. And they'll tell me, well, you know, They'll say, well, they're just doing it for fun, you know? And okay,
right,
you
so
know,
which is fine. That becomes an excuse then for not paying attention to the details, for having a certain kind of laziness, for, I think, again, being careless with your approach is important at every level. Like, if we're doing a podcast and I didn't read the book of the person on the podcast, that's careless. The podcast won't be as good. We'll get less subscribers. You know, then you make less money from it.
But it becomes a slippery slope. Like, you don't do it one time, then, and I think you're afraid of that. Like, when we have people on there, once you start slipping and you let, you know, it's like a restaurant that, okay, we're not doing this, and you start cutting corners, then, okay, it's easier the next time. Then it becomes easier the next time.
It's like the broken window theory. Yeah. So it's that, I don't know if the theory is accurate or not, but I guess, so Giuliani became mayor of New York, and his theory of policing was that if there's one broken window on a street, within a half hour, there's going to be another broken window on the street. Like, people will sort of recognize this is a street you could burglarize, but then it starts to spread more and more.
Yeah.
And so his whole thing was no broken windows.
Well, that's an analog of, like, the details separate the good from the great. I mean, those are details.
So that's a detail. Like, it almost seems like a tiny detail, but he arguably says that he, changed crime in New York City.
Well, didn't Rockefeller, like again, the more you care about it, the more you're concerned about the details, right? Like, I just, I care about certain people, and I remember I gave him a James Altucher Show t-shirt, and I was like, oh, shoot, I should have got one for your daughter because I care about them. I wasn't like, well, hey, at least I did this much. And so the more you care, the more you're willing to do. So if you really care about it, then you're going to want to be the best ever. Like, you care about comedy. You care about chess. You cared about finance. You care about writing, so you make it a priority. And so your actions, are consistent with your priorities. And I think that if you're not, then I think it reflects in what you do. So I think, like, the
but
same
I,
way—
I think, though, that it's related to— and sorry to interrupt.
No,
You're a quoter, and I'm an interrupter. I think, like, you just listed five things for me.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if you included, like, entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
But so I have almost too many things— and that's a problem too, because then I wonder, well, should I focus on this? Should I focus on this? I think vacillating between many things is another way that people prevent themselves from success in any one thing. Because if you do too many things, you can't be the best at, there must be a quote here.
I'm going to interrupt you, and I'm going to quote. if you chase two rabbits, you wind up catching none.
Right. There you go. That's a great quote.
Thank you. I try.
I'm going to tweet that right now. And before the end of this podcast, I'm going to see how many people have retweeted. If you chase two rabbits, you end up catching none. I'm going to see what people...
Exciting podcasting, live tweeting while we're podcasting. And so,
I think that's true. So I think vacillating between different... I remember my very first business, we were making websites for entertainment companies, but at different points we thought, oh, maybe we can make more money as a record label, or maybe we can make more money making literally we thought we could be a tea company. And we were, until we really started to focus on, okay, we're gonna build great big websites and charge a lot for it, we weren't able to grow as a business. We were still trying to find, and I think you see that even like for sports, you can't be great at everything. You have to say, what am I going to be? Am I going to be the best pitcher, or am I going to be the best hitter? Am I going to be the best catcher?
Well, that's, and again, I remember one time I happened to watch Bill Cartwright, like, train some kid, and he was this really good young player, and he was looking at him and he's saying, well, what could he do that nobody else can do? Is he a better shooter than any of us? Is he a better rebounder? And so I think, and Ben Horowitz, who, I always respect his stuff, wrote a book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things, and he talks about hiring people, and he talked about, we hire sometimes people who don't have weaknesses, but we don't hire them for, like, being incredibly strong in a particular area. So we had this, you had this conversation with David Epstein about, like, in the book Range, which I thought was a great book about generalization versus specialization. But again, what is success? I think that comes down to it. And again, some people are happy being a comedian and having, getting $100 or $200 or touring. And I think for me, I have to define success a certain way. And I've said this to you. And again, comparison is the thief of joy. I, you know, don't compare. It makes you bitter or vain. Like, form your own sense of, like, what is success. And success to me, like John Wooden would say, is, like, knowing that you did the best you possibly could to be the best version of yourself. But, like, you've talked about what you, you know, what you really want to do. And you want to be a good dad. You want to be a good husband. You want to be good to those people around you. You want to have good people around you. I try and avoid people who make me fearful or sad. But I think, like, so some people are happy. Like, and I remember reading a very good article in Sports Illustrated, and it was about the basketball player Daryl Dawkins, who faced so many expectations his whole life, you know, and he passed recently, but he was a very fun-loving guy. Like, he, you know, had all these nicknames, and he claimed he went from Lovetron, and they thought he was going to be like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Moses Malone or this great player. And he was, like, such a prodigious physical talent, and he never really reached it. And, you know, I remember there was this writer, Dave Wall, wrote this great piece, and he said, you know what? The guy played 13 years. He scored, you know, thousands of points. Maybe he wasn't the best ever, but he made a lot of people laugh. He had so much fun. You know, he, you know, was just a fun guy and to be around, and he had a lot of people who loved him, and we should all be so lucky. You know, so, we should all be so lucky to have that kind of situation. So I think for us, and we've talked about it, like, different hierarchies are comparing, and so... But I do think, I remember also, again, a place you weren't likely to be at. I remember one time I was watching a basketball game, and the Knicks, you know, earlier in my career, I would go to a lot of sporting events and go to the locker rooms, and the Knicks lost to the Indiana Pacers, and Reggie Miller scored like 8 points, and like it was a famous game where like he totally just took over the game, and I happened to follow him in the locker room, and he's screaming at the top of his lungs. He's saying, they don't want it. They don't want it, so we'll take it. And he was very hungry. He wanted to win. He had a drive. It doesn't mean you always succeed. But like some people don't want it. So like some of those people who come in and do a podcast and they're just riffing and they're not prepared and they're not trying to provide any value and it's a vanity project and they're more concerned about looking cool or sounding cool rather than really making a change, like Seth Godin would say, like making a change for somebody. Like if when you watch something good, you hear a song, it makes a change in you. You listen to it and you say, wow, I really like it. You have a certain feeling. It's not just throwing something out there. So, but those people don't make any change. You know, you don't go on a limb. You're not going to grab fruit, and it's not. And so, fine, they're looking for different things than we're looking for. But like the same way,
they know that
they're not. But other people, like you said, they delude themselves. They don't think that they think they're doing everything they can. They think they are.
I have to say, Airbnb has changed my life. I just love staying in Airbnbs. Like in about a month, I'm going to Cocoa Beach, which is right next to Cape Canaveral. I'm going to watch some rocket launches. I'm going to, of course, be staying in a very nice Airbnb on the beach. And it's just such a great experience. Like the whole world is available to us now because of Airbnb. But whenever I'm at an Airbnb, I always realize, you know, the home that I left to come to this Airbnb, I could be making money on that right now by hosting and being an Airbnb myself. So, and I've known people, I had a friend who basically, you know, made a living from turning his home into an Airbnb. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, you do have an Airbnb there. And it can easily fit into your lifestyle, and it's a great way to earn some money. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours. And they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately
to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Meet Janice. Unfortunately, her thing is sneeze attacks every time spring returns.
I literally sneezed 40 times in a row once.
Luckily for Janice, at the Walmart Pharmacy, she can get over-the-counter allergy relief for things like sneezing, runny nose, and watery eyes fast with online pickup or delivery.
No more suffering? That's nothing to sneeze at.
I see what you did there. Help survive allergy season with fast online pickup or delivery from Walmart. Welcome to an easier pharmacy. Welcome to your Walmart.
There was one podcast which we didn't release purpose.
Yeah.
Where the guy, you'll know who I'm referring to once I describe
it. I'll tell everybody who.
Yeah. Where the guy, I kept trying to bring up things in his book, and it was a good book. I kept trying to bring up things in his book, and he said, no, just tell people to read the book. Yeah. Well, we don't have to talk about that now. And
I can't say he was the worst person in the world, but that's only because I haven't met everybody else in the world.
And he didn't get the idea that this podcast is not, we're not an advertisement. We want to provide value to people. That's what makes this podcast good. That's why people come on this podcast. And he didn't have a sense of you provide value. And then that's how people become attracted to your products and brand or whatever it is you're trying to promote. You can't just promote. It doesn't work. Then you don't, I think what you're kind of saying is you get better by providing more and more value without asking for things in return. And that, because you might not know, if someone goes to practice an hour early, they don't know if that's going to make them better, but it just becomes they're providing value for themselves, hopefully, which will provide value for you know, their team or the audience or whatever. And you know, they have to go in there with the mission of providing value rather than, oh, how am I just promoting myself rather than building the skill?
Yes, I think, again, like for us, I really do focus on my actions, on my outcomes. I'm not saying I'm people a lot more successful, and I just try and be, it sounds corny, or I just try and be the best I can and just get better and better and be better than I was yesterday, as do you. But I do think some people delude themselves. So, and you look at them and you're like, you know what? You should have followed up with us afterwards. You should have been appreciative that James read the book and flattered rather than, you know, had a boost to your ego. Again, we saw this when we had a prominent guest come and she came by herself and And that person said, oh, our publicist really love you and James, and they want to meet you. And then I was like, why didn't they come here? And somebody whose name rhymes with memes said, well, they're busy. And then somebody whose rhyme
I wanted to give
Steve,
the benefit of the doubt.
Somebody whose name rhymes with Steve said, well, if she were Jennifer Lopez, there'd be 10 of them here. And that's, they're not doing their job. Like, successful people do what unsuccessful people don't do.
So, okay, so
they should make her feel important. And there's a lot that could be gained from doing it. If they did that, they would have met us. They could have pitched 10 other clients. They could have worked with that person and said, you know what? You're right. You should do this, this, and this. What do you want to do? They can make that person feel better. Everything we do is based on how we feel. Why is somebody going to come on our show? Why is somebody wear Gucci versus Payless? You know, because they feel a certain way from doing it. Like, I can go, you know, why do you buy this shaving cream or whatever? You feel a certain way from doing it. I want people to feel a certain way when they listen to us or listen to you. And that, again, brings us full circle. When I started with you, when I was in TV, certain people wanted to be famous, in my opinion. They didn't. You said, hey, I enjoy when people come up to me and they say, hey, it changed my life. And I really appreciate it. It makes me feel good about that. So you could judge people on, you know, what they settle for, right? Like, I liked Megyn Kelly's, you know, book. I like just certainly the quote where she said the best advice she got was somebody said to her, the only difference between you and the person whose life you admire is that you settled for less and they settled for more, you know? And so some of these people are happy just doing
I don't know if they are, because we see so many people who are bitter that someone is at, you know, we're primates at heart. So every primate species has ranks themselves from the alpha to the omega. Sure. And it's hard to break that hierarchy. And humans don't have that as much because there's so many hierarchies. But like in a job, for instance, you start off as, an analyst, then a senior analyst, then a project manager, then a director, then a VP, then a senior VP, then executive VP. So there's like a hierarchy that is in every organization, institution, and even like sports. You're in a hierarchy. Sure. Like, here's how you scored. And here's how everybody scored this year in comedy. Here's how many years you've been doing, or here's what TV credits you have in movies. You know, here's how much money you've been, or in entrepreneurship, here's how much money you made. Here's a question I have, though. So two things. One is, I think, again, what holds some people back is they get a little delusional. I think bitterness is kind of an ancillary outcome from being delusional. You think I should already be.
Sure.
You know, some of the hierarchy is arbitrary. So you kind of have to kind of work on those details to make it not arbitrary. But I think some people think that they should be the alpha when they're somewhere in the middle because they haven't taken care of all the details. But they see aspects of themselves that they say, well, I'm better than so-and-so. I should be here. And then that stops them because they stop working on the details.
Listen, I'm the first person to say, like, I was the same person. I mean, I've been in environments where I'm really thriving and I'm the same person. And you want to be at a place worthy of your talents. And I think one thing you're great about is you empower the people around you. So I feel fortunate, you know? And so, like, I always say, like, I try and bloom where I'm planted. I tried to make the most of those earlier opportunities and wherever you are. And I have friends who aren't so fortunate. And I have friends, you know, Stephen Covey likes to say, like, you should, he's dead, but rest in peace. Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, creator Stephen
Covey. I
didn't
know he was
dead. I'm pretty sure. Well, if you're,
I'm going to go on the World Wide Web.
Fine.
Triple W.
Okay. While you're doing that. But he likes to say, like, you know, people should consider, like, their decisions, not their circumstances. You know, where you are is because you're, and I like to say, you know, like, hey, you know, make the best of whatever situation you're in. But, like, certain times you're not in a great situation. It's very crowded. It's hard. So getting back to your NBA analogy, I'm sure some people look at it and they're like, you know what? That coach, you know, is not playing me and he likes this person. That person's his nephew. Or you see it in comedy. The booker's not putting it in me. You see it in, you know, any situation. And, yes, there are some arbitrary situations.
I think just like with investing, you take away the risk of the arbitrary by diversifying.
And isn't that what you're doing when you say, oh, what if I, you know, like you, you know, like maybe if you just keep doing comedy, you'll be Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, and Jerry Seinfeld all rolled into one. But maybe, we've talked about the Scott Adams skill stack. Maybe it's your whole situation has made you, you know.
Well, it's a balance. You can't, you just have to be, all of this is really about awareness. So are you being delusional about where you are and that's leading to bitterness? Or are you vacillating too much on what you should be doing? Or are you too careless about the details at the end, but you think it doesn't matter? Like, for instance, take a look at Tim Ferriss's podcast, okay? He sends out an email where he breaks down by minute, like all the show notes.
Right.
He has advertisers on that page. He does like one or two little extra things.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're good or bad or we should do them, but maybe those are details we should do. I'm not saying we should.
No.
But I see different podcasters do different things and but we're busy doing lots of things. So sometimes maybe I don't take it over the finish line on the details.
And myself included, yeah. I mean, I think that's a way of looking at things. Like you could, you know, getting back.
Which is different than being delusional. Like you have to be aware when you're not taking care of details. You have to be aware, like just now when you brought up, like I'm doing all these things, I'm aware that I'm vacillating and trying to decide which things to focus on more. And that is a problem for me. I'm aware when, or try to be aware when I'm too lazy or when I have too much doubts on myself. So it's getting in the way of trying to improve something.
But getting back to, I'll say two things. Like with Tim Ferriss, like what he talked in the 4-hour work week, essentially the way I interpret a lot of it is that the 40-hour work week, we spend a lot of time doing quote unquote busy work to avoid doing what maybe you could do sooner. So I do that too. I remember you used to watch The Honeymooners and he would always play Swanee River before he did something. And that's like, we do that too. We don't put what's most important first sometimes. And we need to, but we could be self-critical and say that. And I know for me, like there's a lot of things that I'm not doing that perhaps I could. And you have to become ruthless with your time to a certain degree, cut out certain things, and know. And I think as we get, hopefully, you know, we can get better, but it's a decision we have to make. Getting back to Carol Dweck, and we always have a choice between fixed decisions and growth decisions. Like we have a decision every day, right? Like we could be with like somebody who we're comfortable with or try something new. Every day, any decision you could, right? Can't you?
Yeah, but like think about the example with people going out to dinner and talking about their ideas instead of doing them. So let's say you just do that. Let's say all you did was go out to that dinner once a week. And you could say, sure, I want to be with these friends once a week.
Yeah.
That's fine. But then you have to be aware it's probably taking 6 hours roughly.
Yeah.
Maybe even more, but let's just say 6 hours from the time you leave your house to the time you
sure.
get back and recover. So 6 hours once a week, that's 310 hours a year. So in 310 hours, let's say you're a writer and you could write 100 words an hour, which is a very small amount. It's one paragraph. So let's say you could write one paragraph an hour. If you do that for 300 hours, you just missed out on writing a book. So,
right. But life, your happiness and life is based on your relationships with people. But
right,
I
but
just,
that's but that's where you have to decide. Like, do you let the inertia of spending these extra hours? Like, maybe you could see your friends in other ways, or maybe it's not every week; it's every 3 weeks. Or are you vacillating between this is what you really want to do as opposed to writing a book? Or if you have doubts in yourself and the way you kind of are overcoming these doubts is by not doing it at all, but just talking about it. I think this is where a degree of being aware of these things and having a degree of self-awareness about it. But then, and also the delusions too, like, oh, this guy's not a good writer. I could write better than him. But then you have to say, if you don't write, if you're just talking about it, again, delusions lead to bitterness.
But those are the people I don't want to be around. Like I think whenever you have an aggregation of people, you see it with comedians sitting there, or I saw it in TV producers, and there's a jealousy, and if you feed it, it will grow. And I don't want to be around, not only do I not want to be around people who make you fearful or sad, I don't want to be around people who, you know, are judging other people
Or you can also be delusional about your own abilities. So if someone is obsessed with being in the a professional basketball player, but they're, you know, me. It's just not going to, but no, I could do it. I know
but
I
can
do
it. You could be better than you were. Like, you know, you know what I mean?
Right,
and so that's why we always try and tell ourselves, like, just focus on our actions, not our outcomes. Like, let's just do our best and really do our best and focus our attention on that. But like, I don't want, when I was in TV, I would be around people and they would look at this person. Oh, she slept right at the top. She looks like a man, or this person's a moron. And again, small people talk about other people. Big people talk about ideas. Nobody else's success comes at your expense. We all do it. And I do it, you know, and I think we have to force ourselves to it's a muscle, and to say, you know what, that's energy that's not constructive. And we have to, you know, we have to push ourselves to be a better version of ourselves. And
so,
you know.
Well, so here's another question, though. At some point, when should you quit? So, like, all these people who are, like, in the middle of the chain between Alpha and Omega, maybe they're even professional level, but they're just not going to be the best in the world, but they're bitter, they're unhappy. And maybe they're even getting worse because they're spending energy complaining instead of getting better. When should someone quit? And I'll just tell you from my examples.
Yeah.
Like, I have many examples of when I've quit things, but sometimes I quit when things are plateauing, and I always like to feel like I'm improving.
Yeah.
So it feels unpleasant to just plateau. So when I was doing the podcast Question of the Day with Stephen Dubner, it was a fine podcast. We were getting great downloads. We were making money, but we kind of felt just the quality of the podcast and the number of downloads were plateauing. So we quit. And sometimes you fall backwards. And so if you're just getting worse at something and you can't figure out how to get better and you're trying everything and you're aware of all these issues, sometimes then you should quit. Like if you were selling black and white TVs and you refuse to get into the color TV business and you see all these color TV businesses selling better than you and you're slipping and you're not selling any TVs, at some point you have to say, okay, I'm not doing the right thing.
Yes, and it's...
You have to be willing to quit your dream.
Well,
maybe
like
someone's dream is to sell the black and white TVs.
Well, I liked what Charlemagne said where, you know, he, you know, talked about how, everybody's like, follow your dreams. And he had a chapter saying, like, screw your dreams. Like, you know, okay, like, you want to be a rapper, but you're terrible. You can't rhyme. You can't write. You have no flow. Like, Jay wouldn't be a good rapper. But I think that, not to pick on Jay. Yes, to pick on Jay. But, like, Jay shouldn't be a rapper. I mean, but, like, so Jay should do something else. Jay should be an engineer. He's a great engineer, great at a lot of things. But no, I think that's healthy too, right? Like, I think, like, you could, if you're holding on to something so tightly, you don't realize everything else you can, you know, grab and do. But, yeah, I mean, I also think it's how you frame it. You know, I quit this so I could do something better. But again, like, it's not for everybody. You know what I mean? Not everybody wants to.
Right.
Like, when I was I myself was definitely a practitioner of this, and I wasn't my best self, and I could see that. And it's like that line, like, if you live in a ditch long enough, you'll start to decorate it. Like, you'll start feeling this certain way, and you'll start feeling a sense of helplessness. You'll feel like, well, I worked so hard at this, and it didn't make a difference. And, you know, or these people don't recognize it. I have friends who were in that environment, and I'll try and, you know, I guess sort of like the plus equal minus at Frank Shamrock and Ryan Holiday, and you've talked about where you learn from people who are better than you in certain things, and you try and, you know, help other people. And they'll look at, well, Steve, they're never gonna, you know, they're never gonna promote me. And I'm like, you're right, you're damn Skippy. They're not going to. Like, try and look at yourself the way they look at you over there. But you have a lot of choices. I'm sitting across from the person who wrote, choose yourself. We have a multitude of choices how we can react to that. And you would have 500 ideas about what that person can do if you feel trapped, and figure out a different way to kind of, with that situation. I'm not saying it's easy. You know, it's simple, but it's not easy.
And I think part of choice too is, like you just described, someone who wanted to get promoted, didn't get promoted because they were placing a lot of value on
external validation.
On a hierarchy. Promoting means you're moving up in a hierarchy. And so a lot of times you have to be, and, you know, again, let's say you're a musician, you can't be, you might not be able to be more successful than the Beatles, but you could be the most, or
yeah,
you know, they have a very unique sound, or Pink Floyd is a very unique sound. The Beach Boys, we just interviewed Mike Love. They have a very unique sound. There's no other band that sounds like them. You could be the best unique sound for your voice. As you say, you know, go to the place least crowded, and that's where you find success, where there's no hierarchy, so you could kind of be the top of the hierarchy.
But I want to be helpful to people, and I want to just, like, convey a sense of, like, this is how we talk. Like, mm-hmm. and I think the same way, like, you eschew the idea. I can't believe I just used the word eschew. But, like...
E-S-C-H-E-W. Yeah.
No, but I think you avoid saying, oh, it's not self-help. I'm just telling you my story about, in your case, how you managed to lose millions of dollars is twice.
Four times.
Okay, fine. Yeah, sorry to underestimate you. No, but like, but that specific example, and I've heard people talk about, they don't need a how-to business book. They want to read a biography about somebody and say, this is how that person handled it. And I mentioned that example of like a publicist who wouldn't even come to with that client over there. And it's wrong on like 10 different levels. And, you know, and it's wrong. It doesn't make that person feel important. They're not going the extra mile. They can go back to the office another time and do it. They're not trying to help their other clients. They just think small. And those people are prisoners of the moment. They're not prisoners of a bigger dream. They're not trying to do something different, you know? And I think I've watched you, and you've been pretty generous to people around here. And it doesn't mean you have to be obsequious to you. It doesn't mean that you have to be a certain way. But like, we've had people on our podcast, and you see them, hey, long time no see. And they're like, when are you going to have me back on the podcast? And I want to say, and most of the time I do, I'd say, moron, why don't you invite him on your podcast, which in comparison to ours is too tired from cups and a piece. Well, I don't want to compare. But in a comparison to ours, it's not as popular. But like, what's the worst thing James is going to say? No, screw you. Only come on mine. Like, it's like, give something. Like, try and be valuable. Happiness begins where selfishness ends. Like, don't always just think about yourself and be transactional. And I'm like, that's why you're not more successful. I'll be honest with you, that you're selfish, you're short-sighted, that you're not thinking about a win-win, and you're not thinking big enough. You're not thinking about, okay, let's make the pie bigger. You're thinking that it's a zero-sum game, and it's not. And I see a lot of people like that, and I see them with us. And it's like, if I want to meet with somebody, like, I will sit there and say, hey, I hope this can work out for both of us. And I really do. I'm not trying to spin somebody like a dreidel. I'm trying to just be like, hey, I think this could work for you guys, and hopefully it works, you know, for both of us. It will help you to come on our podcast. You'll have a great conversation. Getting back to how it makes you feel, you'll feel good. You'll feel like you learned something. You'll feel like, you know, you reached some listeners. You feel like you had somebody who invested in you. So please invest in us. And so those people aren't like that. And too bad, so sad, you know?
Yeah, no, I think you know, we talked about a lot of different ways someone can invest in themselves, but I think that's a really important point. If you invest in others, and that's like planting a seed. Of course, not every seed blooms, but if you do it enough times, you're going to have many opportunities in the future based on these people you invest in. And you don't do that transactionally. You don't do that in the hopes that they return the favor. You do that because you want to be generous and you want to help them. But ultimately, if you help good people, it's going to come around.
I think for me, a lot of it is, again, it's about like how it makes you feel. And it's the same thing with any situation. And you have to make, it's kind of like James Fowles, Atlantic Magazine, used to say, like, make what's important interesting. So we should make the right thing to be the stuff that feels good to do it. So Tony Robbins talked about it. He said, if you see a hamburger there, you have to train your mind to think, like, it doesn't feel good to eat that hamburger. It feels good that you have the discipline to avoid that hamburger. It feels good, like, you know, like Eleanor Roosevelt said, the future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams. Like, it feels good to feel like, wow, I have this bright, beautiful future. Me being like you, thin in the waist, pretty in the face, and you have all this stuff there. But you have a future of like, so those people, it's their misfortune and their short-sightedness that they don't feel good by helping other people. They think it's, you know, and that's...
And by the way, none of this stuff is hard. Like, it doesn't, like, there's all this advice, like, if you want to move from the middle of the hierarchy to the alpha, you have to, like, you know, work 100 hours a week. You have to destroy yourself doing so. A lot of this is just about being aware of when you're being careless, which sometimes details just take seconds to correct. A lot of it is about being self-aware enough to not be delusional, either delusional in the sense that thinking you could be positive delusional in the sense that you could think, oh, I'm the best, and so you get overly optimistic about your chances, or you could be negative delusional in that you get bitter. Oh, why are they getting more money than me? I'm better than them. You know, it doesn't take any time to get better at your delusions. You just have to start being aware of them. A lot of it is about time management, which actually saves time instead of spends time. So don't go out to that. Don't regularly do something that's going to cost you hundreds of hours a year when you add it up. Take care of yourself because sickness takes you out of the game for weeks at a time. So there's lots of little easy things or even investing in someone else, like sending someone a thank you note or a publicist coming here would have taken an hour, let's say, in that case that you mentioned. So it's all these things are very small, but they add up not in terms of time, but in terms of increasing your chances of success. But you have to be aware of these different problems on the way to that climbing up that ladder.
And I think if you're fortunate, you have people around you who really are dream makers, not dream takers. They're people around you. Like, I think it's important. I think it is important. And I have a friend who has a company and she has people around her. And if she makes a mistake, that person's like, well, look at you. You're not good at this. Or, well, how did that person get good at this? Like, how do you help that person? And you have to want, and I really try and think about that in every single reaction I'm in. I told that to you 2 years ago when we started. Didn't I say, the opposite of love is use. I want you to be really successful. If I'm not, if you don't love that person, you're using them. You're using that person. And I don't want to be in those situations. You want to be where your values align. You want to be with people and you want that person to do really, really well. When I found that I've been in suboptimal conditions, I felt that that person didn't want me to have that bright future that they want for themselves.
But I would say
that's not great. That's not ideal.
I would say that's ancillary also though to like, you know, the inertia of always being around people who aren't thinking of the best for you you know, when you succumb to bitterness, you're going to start hanging around with other bitter people. Yeah. So again, it's all I think there's like higher level things that are easy to correct with just being aware of the word and and thinking about it if it applies to you. And that solves, it seems to me when I interview a lot of people, that solves 90% of the problems they might have if they want to take that next step on the ladder. Being aware of, again, where are they delusional? You know, I see many entrepreneurs who smoke crack about their businesses. They hate every other business, but they think their business is the best when they're not really looking at it, or they're lazy.
And what do you do when you see them? You go and you tell them, or you're just like, this guy's out
them.
To lunch.
You can't tell them because they're not aware that that's a problem. It's like almost like a cognitive bias. Like they're not aware that.
I'm sure they feel like, hey, I need to feel this way. I need to believe this. Same way that people feel like you wear a turtleneck, you're Steve Jobs.
You could say, look, there's no market for what you're doing. And they'll say, they have always a response. Well, we'll create a market. And so, or the market, you know, doesn't know what's there yet. We'll educate them. So there's no real way to tell people. Self-awareness is really the important thing. There's a lot of people who are, again, just plagued by, like what you're talking about, hanging out people who aren't thinking of the best for you. That's either out of your own inertia in terms of you don't feel like moving into a different situation or your own delusions that maybe if you could change them when you can't. That's why I can't tell an entrepreneur your idea is bad. You can't really change people who are delusional. They have to change it. If you're around sick people all the time, either you're going to get sick you're going to get sick, and B, they're not going to succeed because they're sick all the time, and then they're going to get bitter and have doubts and be careless and vacillate between different things. And all these things are sort of macro. They're high level. Yeah. There's specific strategies for being successful, but this is like higher level where you can if you eliminate these problems, then you could start talking about techniques like, okay, I'm going to be around people who are good for me. Yeah. But those are just ancillary to these kind of higher level things to be aware of.
But getting back to Kobe Bryant in sports, Malcolm Gladwell did a very good podcast about revisionist history about the basketball player Rick Barry, who shot free throws underhanded And even like the Columbia women's team didn't want to do it because it was granny style. So he was like one of the only two people. And it was, he had like a quote about Rick Barry, who was just an unlikable person. And Rick Barry couldn't care less. Like he didn't care if the whole league hated him. And so you have to, the nail that sticks out gets hammered. Like you have to, like if you're in TV and you want to be the best producer around, some people are going to hate you. They want you to hang around them in the cafeteria. They want you to gossip about other people. And so you have to be willing. And so nobody really wanted to, nobody, like Rick Barry couldn't care less if everybody thought he looked like a granny shooting underhead. He didn't care if everybody hated his guts. He was a certain type of personality and he just didn't have that, you know, gene where he cared. So
I say I have to work on that. I have to work on that one.
And so you know you're going to get it. Like, you know you're going to get it in any situation. And there's a degree of, like, anti-fragility where you just have to be like, okay, I'm going to get it anyway. I kind of liked in the debate, you know, the other day where Pete Buttigieg said, you know, okay, like, here's what's going to happen in this debate. If we do this, this, and this, they're going to say we're socialist. And if, you know, and if we do this, this, and this, guess what? They're going to say we're socialist too. So we have to do what we think is right, you know? And so I think if those comedians who are happy being at a certain level, maybe they are. You know, maybe they're like the Daryl Dawkins who had a great family life and loved life. And we all have to decide what's our level of success is, how we define it, you know?
But even then, I think always just being aware of these, whether you're happy at that level or not, being aware of what the opportunities are, being aware of when you're delusional, being aware of when you're careless, being aware of when you're not treating yourself well, so you're getting sick more. Just being aware of all these kind of potential obstacles, whether you want to move forward or not, I think awareness is of these things are key. But anyway, Steve Cohen, once again, thank you for co-hosting today's podcast.
Thank you for having me.
We should do these every week. I would love to.
Yeah.
You booked too many people for me and we had to stop doing them.
Again, I would say don't point the finger, point the thumb. It's you.
It's true. Here's the typical
your
conversation.
Your eyes are bigger than your stomach.
Here's the typical conversation. I'll say, Steve, do not book anybody next week. And then you'll say, well, how about if we get Chris Rock?
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll be like, okay.
Well, you have to ask. That's why we're successful. We have to just keep doing the things like Stephen Covey, who is he alive or not?
No, he died in 2012.
See, thank you. he lived a wonderful life and helped a lot of people, Stephen Covey. But I would say though that, I just think like you have to sharpen the saw, Stephen Covey would say.
Yeah, I got to do that.
Yep.
You're fine, but I have to do it.
Yeah, I'm perfect. You're terrible.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.